Value Market is Louisville's grocer. Since 1978, Value Market has been your neighborhood grocery store for all of life's best moments. Value Market gets it. Life is busy. That's why Value Market has curbside and delivery since 2013, freeing up more of your time for the more important things in life. Kids' ball games, family visits, work, tailgating, and cookouts. Value Market gets it. That's why Value Market has four area locations to serve your grocery needs. Mid-City Mall, Outer Loop Plaza, Iroquois Manor, and Mount Washington. At Value Market, you got savings in the bag. ValueMarket.com.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
It's time for the Round Table with Round Daddy.
Hey, Round Daddy.
The Round Table with Round Daddy.
Me, James Strebel, Big Daddy.
With your host, James Strebel.
Hey, Round Daddy, James Strebel. Gotcha.
On ESPN 680 and 105.7.
You have to take the blame for the banner being down. You have to take the blame for the sanctions. You have to take the blame for the fact that we've been in hell for 7 years. Louisville has not been right because of the way you left it. So your anger, your animosity, your all of this stuff that you have towards the University of Louisville all happened because of you. You hired Andre McGee, not me. And so to have all this anger and animosity and bitterness towards Louisville, especially when you got Tom Jurich fired. Let's be honest. We're going to be honest today. You got Tom Jurich fired. All of that stuff happened under your watch. But that's the thing. Everybody that worked with Rick, and hell, the people that worked after Rick, all of them gone. Ty Ray, Bendapudi, all of them is gone. And there's still smoke for Louisville. How? How?
Someone gives Mark Stoops $50. $50! And a whole fan base just goes crazy. He who has not given $50 to your rival program, have thee cast the first stone. However, I am so excited for this interview because we've got probably, because I've always said we've had Coach Summers on here so many times that I feel like it's only just to be able to have a defensive savant to the level that Mike Summers is and Coach Mike Cassidy. And he's with us today. And Coach, first of all, welcome to the show and so appreciative to have you on. But the one thing I want to ask you first that Coach Summers said on here a couple of weeks ago when he was on with me, he said that you can't trust those defensive coaches during the clinic talks because they'll always claim that they've always got something to stop an offense because they're the ones that gets the dry erase marker last. So I'm giving you a chance here to defend yourself against the words of Coach Summers.
Well, Coach Summers and Coach Nord both, I've coached with both of them at different universities 5 different times. They're both on offense. There's a common denominator. They always think we're reading the scripts, we're doing this, we're doing that. We're just out there playing ball. And if anything, when we, Coach Nord or Coach Summers, would draw an offensive play and I'd put the defense up and they would block it, then I'd say how we're going to react. He always ended up with the chalk last.
He left that part out. He always said the defense always ended with the chalk last.
he didn't talk about himself.
Coach Mike Cassidy here with us, and Coach, I want to have you on here because of just your expert level when it comes to defense. 22 years as a defensive coordinator at Louisville, Illinois, Oklahoma State, Baylor, Cincinnati, Georgia Tech, East Carolina, ULM, WKU, and of course you had your stint while I was playing at UK. and then your second stint with University of Louisville. Not only are you a defensive coordinator, but I didn't put two and two together when you texted about your son's wedding this week also, that your son, who is also a defensive coordinator for Sam Houston, one of the youngest coordinators in the country right now. So first of all, congratulations. And then two, how excited are you for that?
Well, I'm excited twofold. Number one, I'm excited Skylar is getting married. And number two, he is the youngest defensive coordinator in the country with Conference USA, which we were a part of here at Louisville. And they play one of my old teams that I coach, Western Kentucky, this year. So it'll be an exciting game.
That is awesome.
Last year, I rejoined Coach Brohm after a short retirement. I retired from Purdue. But Jeff and I have been together a total of 10 years, and I think I'm going to do it again this coming season.
That is awesome. That is awesome. So fans will love to hear this because, again, this is now a third stint for you at the University of Louisville, and to see the different perspectives that you had from your time there during a Orange Bowl win, your second time there with Lamar Jackson. Of course, you were there with Mike Summers as well. But then now seeing this perspective with Brohm and the energy that he's bringing to it, what's different about this time being around this coaching staff compared to your other times around the Louisville staff?
Well, you know, I wasn't with Coach Petrino the first time, the first year, but I was the defensive coordinator the next 3 years, and we lost very few games. And then I rejoined, as well as Jeff did, Coach Petrino again down at Western Kentucky, and then Jeff took over as the head football coach. So I've been, and now Jeff's here at Louisville. Both of them are night and day, personality-wise, coaching, et cetera. But the common denominator is they were both offensive geniuses. They really are. And they really put a lot of stress on a defense. And I think it's been good. I learned a lot of football from both those two coaches. But now, I've been a defensive coach 44 years at 18 different universities, so I've seen a lot of offenses.
And so with that, and I asked Coach Summers this the same question and wanted to get your perspective on it, because just in the 10 years that I've been removed from the game, from playing, both the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball, especially the offensive side of the ball, has changed substantially to where so much of it is this almost back to the styles of the air raid, a lot of RPO, a lot of quick passes, high tempo, and seeing how defenses have reacted and have now gotten to the point to where they can keep these style of offenses to not be as effective, to be able to get those adjustments made. Where have you seen the game of the defensive game planning and the defensive styles change over these past few years?
Well, a lot of it is personnel based, and so many teams now line up with four, sometimes five wide receivers. So defensively, you're seeing more defensive backs, more linebacker types. But when it's all said and done, and I'll go back to Coach Brohm. I worked for Barry Alvarez at Wisconsin. I worked for Ron Turner, where we won the Big Ten at Illinois. And I worked for Coach Petrino. And the one thing that we end every scrimmage on Saturdays is they're going to line up in a two-back set and pound you with the football. And I'll tell you right now, there's nothing more demoralizing to a defense that can't get off the field because the team's going 3, 5, 6, mm-hmm. then they'll hit a 20-yard play. And, you know, I think the mixture of both, has really, really been effective the time I've been with Coach Brohm.
That brings up such a great point about Brohm as well, and it's kind of the tale of two cities a little bit between Coach Brohm and Coach Stoops, because neither coach has an offensive philosophy of real high tempo, spread offense. Brohm has a pretty traditional style offense compared to Mark Stoops, who's a very pro style, wants to control the clock. But you see the offensive success that Brohm has had just in 1 year at Louisville versus Mark Stoops, who has struggled to be able to find any sort of offensive consistency, especially since he converted to this pro style after once Liam Cohen's first stint was here. So to your perspective, how is Brohm able to run this offense so effectively where UK has kind of been extremely inconsistent with it?
Well, I think you, and again, my hat's off to Coach Stoops. He's now the winningest coach in the history of Kentucky. And, mm-hmm. you know, the game we played this past year could have gone either way. It was a play here or a play there. But as far as Coach Brohm, I think he is constantly studying football, whether it's other opponents, the NFL, and he'll come in the defensive room many, many times and put a defense on the board, and, you know, we'll say, well, what if they run this formation and motion this? And a lot of things that he puts on the board, we adapt to and is part of our package. But the one common denominator since Jeff's been a play caller and then a head coach is the philosophy and the style has really not changed that much. And believe it or not, we're still running a defensive package that originated here in 04, 05, 06, a lot of the same calls because that's what Coach Brohm knows. And Coach Brohm is an effective head coach in that he does run the offense as far as on game day, but Brian Brohm is offensive coordinator. I mean, it's like speaking to one of the same. But defensively, he is really, really involved. And you take just the opposite with Mark Stoops. His whole background has been as a defensive coach. And I don't know how much input that he has on offense, but I do go back to the style that, you know, he's been around a lot of good football coaches himself.
You bring up just the night and day difference between Petrino and Brohm, and especially this first year that Brohm has been there, from an outsider looking in, and especially as someone who comes from a rival school. The Brohm family is so well respected, even outside of the rivalry and the battle for the Governor's Cup. I think a lot of UK fans have a high respect for Brohm and his passion for the University of Louisville. What has he brought from a cultural standpoint for being around and playing against Louisville and one year of coaching against Louisville? I've never seen the culture around that football program as lively. And not saying that it didn't have great culture during Petrino or Strong or Satterfield, but there is just a distinct difference with Brohm there. Can you kind of give a little insight for listeners on that?
Oh, absolutely. I think Coach Brohm made a very, very strong case to all the Louisville fans his first or second year that he was at Purdue, and there was an opening here. And he just said the timing wasn't right. He had given his word to the families, the players, et cetera, at Purdue. The timing wasn't right. And this time around, the timing was right. So it goes back to, number one, the type of person that Coach Brohm is. And, you know, what you see is what you get. There's no false airs about him. There's an easy going side to Coach Brohm, but make no mistake about it. You don't want to be called to the principal's office too many times because Coach Brohm can have a get-right session with the best of them.
That is great. To me, Brohm gives off the vibe of a football guy. And I think you see, it's weird. He seems to be like a dying breed of college head football coaches that just hunger and love this game so much and always want to discuss how to improve offenses, how to improve the defense, what scheme-wise can they do different, always constantly trying to learn, is not focused on really the accolades of being a head coach, but really just being a football guy. It's not as much, hey, this is a guy that I can have a beer with, which I assume you can with Brohm, but I feel like I could sit in a room with Brohm with a whiteboard and just talk football for hours and there not be any lull in conversation.
Well, there's a lot of successful coaches out there that are, quote, CEOs. In other words, they're the head coach. They do all the speaking engagements. They do all the interaction with the fans, the boosters, which Coach Brohm's excellent at. But they hire an offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator. And it's those guys' job to hire assistant coaches and everything. Whereas Jeff is a hands-on guy. And we use the term a lot of times when we're recruiting, and we'll say, is that kid a rug rat? Is he is he consumed with football or sports or whatever? And that's the way Jeff is. He loves sitting around talking ball, offense or defense. But then you turn around, put a suit on him, and he dresses up nice, and he can, you know, I think you talk about walk the walk and talk the talk. That's what Coach Brohm's all about.
Going back to defense here for a little bit, what with how this game is changing, and not just from the standpoint of NIL, stuff like that, but just how schematically this game continues to change, where do you see defensive coordinators kind of going in the future, especially with how these offenses are being played now, kind of the higher tempo and more kind of spread them out kind of perception? Where do you think defensive philosophies are going to be going here in the near future?
Well, I think you see a lot of the defensive coordinators around the country, there's flavors of the NFL in it. And, you know, like I said, you're playing against a lot of spread offenses, so it starts with having the best personnel on the field to match up against the receivers and running backs that they flex out. A lot of people we play will line up with two tight ends and two wide outs, so you've got to be able to adjust and adapt as a defensive play caller. You know, one of the big things I think that I've heard it through the years that, you can't coach those kids like you used to back in the day. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. You don't neglect them as far as fluids and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I found as long as a player knows that you care about him as a person, his best interest, and believe it or not, getting around football players, I want to get to know the families of the players. Not only the DBs, which I've always coached, but I'll go over while we're stretching and harass the receivers. And, you know, I'll ask one of them, how's mama doing or how's your mom doing? And they look at you and, you know, I think it's really good. And our staff does an outstanding job of being around the players. And the one thing, if you'll notice about Jeff Brohm's staff, and you look at each coach, they've either played for him or coached for him for a period of time. And we talk about bringing a culture to a program. Well, the culture is traveling with Coach Brohm and all the coaches around him. We know what we're trying to put in as far as off the field, helping in the community, and obviously the football takes care of itself. But, you know, we got to be able to play at a high level. And he's got a lot of coaches with a lot of experience. And, you know, I don't think you'll see – there's always coaches that play checkers and dominoes as far as making changes within a coaching staff. And I don't think you'll see a whole lot of that from Coach Brohm. And, you know, it goes back to they know what to expect from him. They know what we want to expect from our players. So there's one message being spoke by every strength coach, graduate assistant, analyst, and the coaching staff. And it's all saying the exact same thing to our players. And I think that's very, very important in a program.
Absolutely. And I love what you brought up as well, because that seems to be an argument that you hear amongst fans and people that haven't really been in a collegiate locker room before of, well, you can't coach players as hard as you used to, because if you do, they're going to leave. And it's refreshing to hear you say that, the counter thought to that, because it's, again, I did not play in the NIL era. I didn't play in this new era of the transfer portal and all that, but obviously, with, you know, the coaching staff that we were around at UK, that was a coaching staff that, one, would yell at you. They'd make sure that they would correct any issues that you saw on the field. Mike Summers and Greg Nord 100% were going to get in your tail if you made a mistake, but I never questioned how much Coach Summers loved his offensive linemen and loved me. And that gives a coach permission to be able to coach you, to be able to coach you hard, to be able to push you to limits that you did not think you can get to. So it's reassuring, and I think it's reassuring to fans as well, that the game is not changing as much as we think it is, to where you're even having to change your coaching style.
Well, I think, again, I think the NIL has thrown some curveballs to every program. And I'm not saying it's good, bad, indifferent, but my son just graduated as a sixth-year senior at Oklahoma State University. And he played football 5 years and actually got a sixth year because of COVID. He ended up being one of the captains. And you know what? I watched that program very close, too. I know Mike Gundy, and there's a lot of similarities between him and Coach Brohm. And, you know, I think, again, it's so important for a head football coach to surround himself with guys all rowing in the same direction. And Mike Summers and Greg Nord are two of my best friends, if not the two best friends that I have. And I know, you know, they were on the opposite side of the ball. And I'll give you an interesting story. Coach Summers was the offensive coordinator at Oregon State, and they had led the NCAA in rushing. And Coach Summers' background was three-back, a lot of wishbone. And Coach Nord and I, we were at East Carolina together. Well, we're getting ready to play Coach Summers in Oregon State. They're coming to Greenville, North Carolina. So, you know, we talk not as much on the phone as we do regular. And but we did say, well, Coach Summers said, you know, the line will be drawn in the sand, and we'll try to beat your brains in. You'll try to beat our brains in. But let's try to see each other just for a moment away from football. So the plan was Coach Nord and I were going to casually drive by, and when they got off the buses and go into their hotel room, then Coach Summers was going to join us, and you know, we were going to chat for a while. Well, at the time, I was picking up my dealer car, and I had a gray Oldsmobile Bravado, four-wheel drive. It had a giant pirate's head on the hood, had pirates on the side. I was a walking billboard for East
That's
Carolina.
Great.
And we pull up with those buses, and you should have seen all the eyes. So we had to circle around. We didn't want to pick Coach Summers up. So this goes on, and we're getting ready to play the game. And we're Coach Nord, myself, and a couple other coaches. I've always coached from the press box. I can see everything. And Coach Summers was doing the same thing. So we had drawn the line, and we're riding the elevator up, and my back's to him, and Greg's back's to him, and he takes his clipboard and whacks me across the butt as he's getting off. So the game came down where, however you say it, spin it, whatever, East Carolina was ahead by 6 points, and they had the last play of the game. And it's a play that they had practiced forever. And basically, the wide receiver ran a curl route. They threw it to him. He pitched back to a running back, and the quarterback was trailing the running back. It was working to perfection. And we tackled him on the two-yard line. So we won the game, but, boy, what a game. And then, of course, after the game again, we were buddies like we've always been.
Absolutely. I can. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall for that one, for sure. By any chance, do you know what Coach Summers is doing this exact second?
You know what? He's with, I think, Greg Nord, Steve Bacco, who's
yep.
been a high school coach here forever. John Nocta, who played at Kentucky, his son Pete Nocta runs our recruiting, and Coach Summers and John L. Smith. They're all at what they call Cowboy Camp.
Yes.
And it's over, you know, it's over in the middle of nowhere. And we have a friend, Joe Ruddle, that has a lot of cattle. And for the first day, they do cattle work like you see on TV. And then they ride horses and have a good time. It's about 3 or 4 days. I've never been able to enjoy it because I've been coaching college ball 45 years, but I've had a fireworks business 51 years ever since high school. So I've never gone to cowboy camp with them.
I asked him if he wanted to come on the show this week, and he said, no, I'm at cowboy camp. And that's yeah. that's all he put was just, I'm at cowboy camp. I was goes, what's cowboy camp? And he just sends me a picture of him on a horse. I was like, this is the most Mike Summers thing I've ever seen. But
well, now, when he was at Oregon State, I think their AD was a true cowboy where they had cattle they'd let run free, or horses they'd let run free on the range, and they'd have a big roundup for like a week and a half, and they would have huge cattle drives, and it'd be run by cowboys. And Coach Summers has his hat, his chaps, his boots, you know, he looks the part.
That is
Coach
great.
Nord now, Coach Nord, 5 years ago, in the evening, there's a picture where Coach Nord got bucked off the horse. And there's a picture of his back, his bottom, everything. And it's jet black. You couldn't pay Coach Nord to get back up on a horse, I promise you.
Oh, gosh, that's awesome. Oh, I'm going to have to bring that up to Coach Nord.
Do you have time for one more story? What? Being at another university playing Louisville.
Yes. Let's go. And, one more story.
Okay. And I guess it was 2001, whatever the year of the Trade Center was. I was at the University of Illinois, and we were playing Louisville. They had Dion Branch, Dave Ragone. I think they lost 2 games that whole year. But I'm up at Illinois, and Greg and I talked every week. two and three times a week, except that week we did not talk. And then, unfortunately, 9/11 happened, I think, on a Monday or a Tuesday. And they come in and they say, well, they've canceled our game with Louisville because of Big Ten scheduling and everything. Illinois, we couldn't work it out, so we weren't going to play each other. So that afternoon, it's Wednesday, the next day, and, you know, all the football's canceled, which it should have been because of the tragedy. But about Thursday, Coach Nord and I are on the phone again with each other, and I'm telling him what we were going to do against him, and he was telling me they were going to do against him. And I swear to you, in mid-conversation, our secretary comes in and says, Coach Cassidy, word is, we just got it, we're playing Louisville next Saturday. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, Greg, I was teasing. We weren't really going to. He was stuttering and stammering, and we came to Louisville, or they came to Champaign, and it was a heck of a football game.
That is great. Oh, gosh, that is awesome. Coach Cassidy, thank you so much for the time today, and congratulations again on the success, Skylar's success, the wedding coming up. I mean, you're a busy guy for the next few weeks, and also best of luck to you this season as well.
Thanks a lot, and I look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Coach Mike Cassidy.
That was awesome.
Man, I love Coach Cassidy, man. But him, Greg Nord, and Mike Summers all run the same circle. Mm-hmm. And, it is just funny when you get those three together. It's awesome. Great, great people. And that's the great thing about this sport, mm-hmm. as well, is I remember when Coach Cassidy would yell at me, Nord would yell at me, Summers would berate me. And now, again, decade, 12 years later, and it's now you're able to go and just have these funny stories. One quick story, I was watching the regional finals with Christian Academy and Lexington Catholic, mm-hmm. and Coach Summers and I went and watched the game with each other because we were watching one of his former players who's now the offensive line coach at Christian Academy.
Okay.
And then Zach West, who's one of my former teammates, one of his former players, that was the offensive line coach for Lexcath. And we were sitting in the stands, and I leaned over to him, and I said, Coach, how cool is your legacy right now that you've got two guys that are playing in a regional final for the state to go to the state championship, and two guys that they're coaching your exact same philosophy, not just from a football perspective, but from how to be a man, how to be a great father, a great husband, and instilling that in other kids. You've had an impact now on multiple generations of kids. Mm-hmm. And he looks at me, then looks back out of the field, and he goes, yeah, you know, it's really cool, but I just can't stop thinking about the ones that, you know, that just couldn't get it together. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I never thought of it like that. And he goes, yeah, I think about these two guys that are success, but yet I'm sitting next to some dude that just decides to just be a loudmouth on the radio. You're listening to the round table with Round Daddy, I'm Max Godby, who's just a loudmouth. When we come back, we've got the Gooby Fett offensive line clinic. We'll be talking through powers and counters and the old school trick plays. You're listening to the round table on ESPN 680.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience, too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.
Pat Kelsey, Dusty May, Josh search.
Yeah, it's the Mark Pope search. It's the Mark Pope search. The worse than Pat Kelsey, Dusty May, and Josh.
Welcome back to the Roundtable with Round Daddy. Now here's Round Daddy, James Strebel.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. Max Godby, Jeff Weitze in studio right now. And Jeff, I hope you're ready for this.
So
every Monday during summer radio,
okay,
we do the Gooby Fett offensive line clinic.
Okay.
And Tanner, shout out to Tanner, came out with this awesome little intro music for it. So there's going to be some great dramatic Star Wars music that's going to be playing over. And I take an element of offensive line play,
mm-hmm,
and we kind of walk through it and we dissect it at the granular level, and so you can truly understand the intricacies that it takes to play offensive line, because I'm not an expert on a lot of things, actually, like not anything.
Nothing.
But offensive line play,
O-line
thing,
you got that down.
I've got that down. So Zach, let's go ahead and play that intro and we're going to get into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, pull over your cars, because it's time for the Gooby Fett O-Line Summer Clinic.
Shout out to Tanner on that. I love this. All right, so we are now going to be breaking down a defensive line and linebacker's worst nightmare. Power plays and counters.
Okay.
Counters, the original trick play of early vintage 1920s college football.
Yeah, fake one way, go the other.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, the most important thing when we're talking about a counter and a power play is obviously the pulling guard.
Mm-hmm.
That is the most integral part for this. But not all pulling guards are the same. The same as all pulling plays are not the same. So, we're going to take counter to the side. We're going to set it off to the side a little bit. We're going to just talk about power, just the power play.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to set this up as power right.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's going to be talked about from the perspective of the left guard. So as a left guard, I am responsible to use a pull technique to be able to get myself behind the offensive line. Probably going to hit the gap between the center and the right guard, or right on kind of the backside of the right guard, wherever he winds up,
mm-hmm,
to go and hit the play side linebacker. To do that, though, there's two different philosophies. So this is still debated. 100 years later, there's been over 150 years of college football, and this technique is still debated to this day versus a standard pull technique or what's called a skip pull. So do you know what a skip pull is versus just a regular pull technique? So
what is a skip pull?
So a pull technique, just your standard pulling guard, it is an aggressive turning of the hips with your play side arm, torquing your body, taking one step, boom, mm-hmm, and riding the backside of the center,
mm-hmm,
and working your way up.
Yes.
It's a great aggressive play. However, the issue with that is your body's turned to where you can't see where that play side linebacker is, where he's lining up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that linebacker so good that he's going to maybe ride with the play, be able to see that you're pulling to where he's going to set up and eventually jackknife and meet you right at the line of scrimmage? You can't see. So the game evolved to where you have offensive linemen now that use a skip pull. So K counterintuitive. Stay with me on this, Jeff, because it goes against every philosophy that tells you about the game of football.
Okay.
So the first step, you're a left guard. You're sitting in your left guard stance. Instead of stepping with your play side foot, you are going to be taking a step back with your left, almost pushing off of your front foot, your right foot at this point, and almost skipping, taking a big step back, landing on your left foot. Now you're away from the line of scrimmage. Now you're taking that left foot and pushing back again. You're now almost half a yard away from the offensive line, and you are skipping. Just like Yogi Bear.
Wow.
You're actually skipping to the point to now, not only are you away from all the trash that's being collected, now you've got a perfect vision of this linebacker, and I can eye him up and see him, and I can adapt how I pull at this point to be able to attack that linebacker. So I skip pull. I'm looking. I see him. Now, if he decides I'm going to go ahead and just meet him right in the hole, take the legs out, or just meet him right there and just bury him at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you've got a linebacker thinking, okay, I'm going to try to beat him to the outside because everything starts crashing in. Let's say there's a blitz or something that's causing the right guard and the right tackle to have to wash down.
Mm-hmm.
So all that washes through, because my eyes are up, I'm able to see that now. And now I can adjust the pull to be able to go and attack that linebacker now to the outside. So I am pro skip pull.
Okay.
I'm pro skip pull. But you set all that up because that running back is going to follow you. It's one of the greatest feelings as an offensive lineman. Because at the point where the running back is getting the ball, at that point you've probably either are about ready to initiate contact, or you have initiated contact with that linebacker as soon as that running back gets that ball. And they're going to read based off what you do. Mm. You are the decision maker for that running back. If he's going to cut it back into the heart of where the play is, bounce it to the outside, or burrow through depending on the play. So you want to try to stay as parallel to the line of scrimmage as humanly possible. So when you're skip pull, you get into the line of scrimmage, you tee up, hit that linebacker, and now you've got to decide where you're going to take that linebacker's momentum. Naturally, you probably want to be able to push it, continue it to the play side, to that right side, and then allow that linebacker to just follow right off of your butt to be able to take it up to the center of the field at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. We've got power. So we're set on power. Now, what about counter?
Counter.
So knowing what we have to do with counter, because we're not pulling for a playside linebacker anymore. We're now pulling for a playside defensive end.
Okay.
A defensive end now. So does a skip pull do anything for a guard when doing when on counter? What do you think?
I don't see that happen.
You're correct. So on a counter play, you want to stay as close to that offensive line as possible because you don't want that defensive end to see you.
Yeah.
Because you want the hit.
Yeah,
you're
catching them off guard.
Exactly.
You think he's got a free run and here you come.
Exactly. So if you're playing against a defensive end, a really good defensive end, this is going to be their reaction. They're lined up on that tackle. When they feel the presence of that tackle go away, they're going to get an athletic stance, and they're going to try to squeeze and press in because they know something's coming.
Yeah.
And they're going to own this. And this is a bad situation for a guard because at this point, you've got to turn into a coal miner at this point. You've got to dig him out in some way, shape, or form. Because the play's not successful if you're having to just stalemate him there.
Mm.
So you've got to come up with a split-second decision when you see that defensive end setting down and taking the place of that tackle. One of two options. Put your big boy pants on and you're running full tilt and you're going to collide with him. That's option one. Two, if you see that he is pressing that much at the last second, you can kind of go with a semi-skip pull technique where you see him going and then all you do is adjust just a little bit, attack his outside shoulder, press him back inside, and wash him up. Mm-hmm. You can go in that perspective to where, at that point, again, who's the running back reading on this play? Pulling guard. So wherever you dictate based off that defensive end, that's where the running back's going to go. Mm-hmm. So if you are able to dig him out and be, you know, put your big boy pants on, dig him out, that running back's got a clear lane at that point and can go for days.
Yeah.
However, if he's crashing down that much, that guard washes him down a little bit, that running back knows at that point, after he's made that counter cut to come back, he's turning this into a stretch play at this point. Mm-hmm. But the only thing that you cannot do is commit to trying to dig out a defensive end and get stalemated. Because what's going to happen if you get stalemated?
It bottles everything
up. And now that running back's now going to have to cut to the outside. Mm-hmm. That's a no-no. You never want your running back to cut to the outside. Because at that point, you've got defensive players. What's their biggest thing? What's the defensive player's biggest thing?
Not give up the edge.
Yeah, don't give up the edge. Yep. Don't get beat to the outside. Yep. And at that point, your running back's done because you weren't able to dig out that defensive end. Mm-hmm. So you've got to make a commitment at that point. You're going to blow him up, or are you going to be able to cap him, wash him inside, and allow the play to open up? Because at that point, you don't have the defensive end there. It could be for a huge play.
Yeah, so the number one thing is don't get stalemated.
Exactly.
Is now, if it's a high-level defensive end, how hard is it to not get stalemated?
It depends. Again, it depends how quick you're able to do your counter pull or your skip pull. You can catch even the best defensive players off guard. My claim to fame, basically, I only had two good plays when we played against Alabama. One, I cut Clinton Dix on a screen and made him go like 3 feet in the air. Mm. It was great. That was the only good play I had on him. And I blew up C.J. Mosley on a power play because he got lost in traffic. Mm-hmm. Now, he saw that we ran the play the exact same. Because he looked over to the sideline and Neil Brown's going duo and doing his finger like that. It's like a swirl, which, I mean, everyone knows what that means.
Yeah.
So he eyed me down, jackknife and blitz, add on blitz, and blew up the play. You'll get one on C.J. Mosley. But that's it.
Yeah, first round pick. Yeah, exactly. It's tough. No, it's not a bad. Like, hey, you know, I did what I was supposed to do on the play.
Exactly.
They ran it back. It ain't my fault that he's smart as hell and can look over and say they're doing this again. I'm not getting blown up by Max Godby.
Exactly.
Like, it's like, no, I'm not letting this happen.
That's like America losing to Japan. It's like, no, this ain't happening. Yeah, exactly. This ain't happening again.
Exactly.
But for a really good defensive end, again, that's why it is so important. It is so important to watch film. Mm-hmm. Because when you're able to watch the film and really dissect it and understand players' tendencies, because you'll know the defensive ends that like to hit, mm-hmm. the ones that don't like to get hit, mm-hmm. and they don't like to get blindsided. You can always tell the dudes that were like the 280 defensive ends, like glorified defensive tackles, those guys, I'm thinking, okay, I'm either going to try to cut them on the edge or just try to wash their momentum down. Mm-hmm. Because they will ride the tackle, mm-hmm. ride his back hip until he feels pressure.
Yeah.
That you'll have defensive ends like that. Now you have others that are oblivious, and those are the most fun. Because it is so important for a defensive end, if they feel that pressure going away, not to get upfield. Because mm-hmm. what happens when you get upfield at that point?
Take yourself out of the play.
Exactly. You take yourself out of the play, and it lines you up for a kill shot. Because then, for me as a guard, I have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Because if I miss you, you're going the opposite way. Mm-hmm. So I can launch. I can do anything I want. And then I'm winning that at that point. So that is a breakdown of the power encounter, something near and dear to my heart. So next time you see it, what you're watching game and you're seeing counters and you're seeing pulling guards, make sure you say, hey, protect the inside.
Yep.
And make sure you beat that defensive end and dig him out.
Dig him out. There it is. I love it. I love it. I love the breakdown of the power and the counterplay. Because like you said, I've seen guys blow up plays. And I've seen just guards just absolutely destroy defense and the linebackers.
Like, exactly.
They've destroyed them on pulling guards. I mean, the thing, and he's a tackle, but they'll line him up as a guard sometimes just for pulling purposes, and that's Trent Williams. Like, I've seen just Trent Williams just destroy all pros when he's pulling, and it's something to watch. It makes football football. It's like, this is why I don't play this sport at this level. Because that dude running full speed at me, nah, I'm okay. I am okay on that.
Dude, the some of the pulling guards I've gotten to see, the Logan Stenbergs of the world, the Zach Wests of the world, my gosh. Zach was so close to making NFL money just because of his ability to be able to pull on power and counters.
Wow.
I mean, he was a stud at it because he was just so aggressive. Texter, I just looked up the skip pull. Safe to say that would not have floated with my high school coach. He would have blew a gasket if this was tried. Now, the texter is not wrong, because if you look up on YouTube skip pull, offensive line skip pull, it looks weird. But it was actually the Big Ten that started to do this. And a bunch of Big Ten offensive linemen started this technique because obviously they were so run dominant in the early, well, always.
Forever.
But, but when they were peaking in like the mid-90s, early 2000s, they started to add this adaptation of the skip pull. And it's not for unathletic offensive linemen. You've got to be an athletic offensive lineman because it is very choreographed footwork to be able to pull it off. So, yes, it when you're first watching it, you're like, this is the most sissy thing I've ever seen. What in tarnations is this? But all that to say, it improved my game so much to be able to go to the skip pull. Texter, will you please tackle me? I want to know what it's like. Well, I played offense, so I've only recorded two tackles in my entire career.
Wow, so and interceptions, fumbles? Is that what it was?
Interception and a punt return.
Punt return, okay.
I actually tore my labrum on that punt return, on that tackle. LSU punt returner ran right into my shoulder.
Who'd you tackle? Do you remember who it was?
Oh, look up 2014 LSU punt returner, and that's who it was.
Okay. There was a little late to be I thought OBJ or Jarvis.
Yeah. Landry.
That's a little late, I think, for those guys.
That's what I was saying. I didn't know if it was, like, you know, one of them.
Fournette, maybe? Was it Fournette?
No. Gosh, no.
No, Fournette's not returning punts.
No. Fournette's not right. I don't think Fournette knows how to catch a punt, let alone I think
which
that
is a skill
just,
in itself.
It's a huge skill. It's a good skill.
You got 11 guys running towards you, and you got to look up in the air.
Just
while
the concentration.
You're not
looking. I don't envy anyone that has to do that. But let's see. Why does JJ sound like Jeff Lutzey Jr.? Well, that's because Justin stuck in a soybean field.
Yeah.
That's why.
Me.
I literally got in my car, started it, and heard riding to backside of the center. Save that one for the mixtape. Who's playing Revenge of the Sith soundtrack under the convo? That'd be Zach. That's a part of the offensive line kind of mood that we're trying to set, but Zach, we probably go ahead and turn that off. we're done with that part of the conversation. I don't know who it was, but I tore my labrum that game. Everything about that game was just awful. That was just such an awful night.
Oh my goodness.
I was on SportsCenter's top 10 that night also because they returned a punt for a touchdown.
Oh man.
And you tried to see my 300 pound fat butt trying to catch a punt returner.
Yeah.
I had the perfect angle to get to him, and he turned into another gear and just and I was like, there's no way this could get any worse. And then LSU player came up and tripped me.
Oh my goodness.
And you could see my legs go like in the background while they're celebrating.
While they score.
Yeah. And I'm just sitting there and I just look like a big fat baby sitting in the middle of the end zone. I'm just like,
oh wow, I'm pulling up the highlight right now. They still have it.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a good block. I see. You got the angle there, and you're getting blocked by about three guys.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound
you were the last line of defense.
I was the last line of defense.
They might as well just start playing the fight song.
Does not sound fun at all.
No, it doesn't.
You were mostly guard in college?
I was guard center, and I played a little bit of tackle.
Guard center. Okay, so who was the, whether it was in practice or game, toughest guy you had to block?
Let me save that for the next segment because it's a long explanation.
All right.
But when we come back, I will talk about the hardest person I had to block. You're listening to The Roundtable on ESPN 680.